T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app today.
Would you walk us through a typical day?
Burger King, Wendy's, and McDonald's.
Stop spending!
I'm president and you're not.
This is the greatest country in the world, but we do have some really stupid people representing it from time to time.
I am proud to shut down the government. I will be the one to shut it down. I'm not going to blame you for it.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I don't think he's a smart person, but he's got a loud voice.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
We have this guy that walks by our building here. We see him on a weekly basis, and I'm telling you, it's Kris Kringle. It is Santa Claus in the off season. Few people on the planet know that Santa lives here in St. Louis during the summer, but now you do.
Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh my God!
Santa here? I know him. I know him.
All right, so I just wanted to get that out of the way. And by the way, it feels like Christmas in October because of what happened yesterday. And I think that we all knew that the Cardinals were capable of this, but what a first inning. Tom Ackerman is over at Busch Stadium right now. Not only did we win this game, and Tom, it didn't even click to me until Tuesday night that not only could the Cardinals be in the National League Championship Series, but there's a possibility they might be the home team. And Clayton Kershaw made them the home team, didn't they? Whoop. Let's see. I got to press the button. There you go. Now I got you on.
Hey, is the first inning over yet?
Really? Seriously? I've never. Now, look, I will tell you this. I was at Busch Stadium. You're going to have to jog my memory. I was at Busch Stadium in 1996 when the Braves pretty much did something similar to the Cardinals, and that was in a deciding game of the NLCS, I believe.
Yes, and I was there in 1985. I want to say 1985 against the Dodgers when the Cardinals scored 9 runs in the second inning of the game at Busch Stadium. This was a 10-run first inning. What an incredible frame that was that made everybody relax, at least everybody but the players on the field. They're still trying to finish it, and they win the game. They win game 5 of the NLDS at just a tremendous, tremendous outpouring. What a great effort. What a great win for the St. Louis Cardinals. They get the win, and they are in the NLCS. I'm standing on the field here at Busch Stadium. I'm looking out at the field and watching the Cardinals warm up. Walking past me just now is Dakota Hudson. Out on the field, just tossing the ball around, Daniel Ponce de Leon, Michael Wacha, Andrew Miller, Andrew Kisner, Matt Wieters. They're all out there getting the job done, just working out a little bit. Tyler O'Neill. So the Cardinals are going to be busy. They're going to be working out today, trying to get a few things done, and then they'll be at it tomorrow night.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what happened in that game. And I texted you a couple nights ago, Tom. You know how big of a baseball fan I am. I've been just absolutely glued to all of these series. And last night was immensely entertaining. Clayton Kershaw gives up back-to-back jack. And the Nats tie the game, and then this happens.
Swing a fly ball, center field deep. Bellinger going back to the warning track, to the wall. It's a grand slam. Howie Kendrick has done it. They're going crazy in the Nationals dugout. Howie Kendrick with a grand slam.
Yeah, that's Charlie Slows with the call, Tom. And I don't know if people really cared if we faced the Dodgers or the Nationals. I don't think I was intimidated by either. But this is the first time that the Washington Nationals are in the League Championship Series, isn't it?
Yeah, they finally win a series, and Howie Kendrick, I mean, he could have last night gotten anything free in St. Louis, that's for sure. Not anymore, just for one night.
Yeah, right.
Now he's going up against the Cardinals in the NLCS, but my gosh, what a call, what a grand slam, what a moment. Clayton Kershaw, as you mentioned, giving up back-to-back home runs before that. What an amazing night and the Cardinals now have home field. Now, home field doesn't always mean that you have the advantage. We've kind of seen this now. We saw it yesterday with the Cardinals taking one in Atlanta and the Nationals taking one in Los Angeles. But the Cardinals have home field in the NLCS. They get to come home, sleep in their own beds, game one and two, Friday and Saturday, and if necessary, game six and seven back here. You got to feel good about that. I think that it's an evenly matched series again.
I think
the Nationals are very talented, just as the Braves are. They have a very good staff, but the Cardinals have all of those things. They have a good staff. They have a good bullpen. They have a strong lineup. As we saw yesterday, they have the capability of exploding at any given time. And the one thing the Cardinals have done all year is field the ball exceptionally well, and that hangs on Mike Schilt. So this has been, I think, a very, very good year for him, obviously, to get his team to this position. And now that they are, Mark, I think anything is possible. I think this is a team that believes it can do anything. And in a seven-game series, they will be very tough to put away. You're going to have to win four out of seven against them. And as they've shown, that's not easy to do. I mean, they will not lose consecutive games.
Tom, do you feel, and I'm not the first one to say this, but it's almost been, and I'm guilty of this, and I think a lot of fans, this has almost been a team that has had a lot more confidence in itself than the fans or even the local media has had. Wouldn't you agree?
I would say, by and large, yes. Now, you know, I've kind of said all year that you've got to let the season play out. I didn't say they were going to go win the World Series, but I felt that they had a good enough team, even at the deadline when they refused to deal Dylan Carlson and refused to deal Nolan Gorman for a starter. I still felt like this was a team that had a chance to win the division, and you had to let the season play out. I think that there was a lot of grumbling about the team after they had a very rough May. I think there was a ton after they didn't make a deal. There were some people that wanted to throw in the towel. But, you know, I think that this is such an amazing fan base. And, by the way, the media that covers this team does it extensively and does it for the fans. It's all out of a passion for the team. Like, you wouldn't want it any other way. Why would you want to be in a town where people just go, ah, well, whatever, they're not going to make this year. I think I'll go to the beach. I mean, in St. Louis, this is what it's all about. People want they believe that they know what's best for the team, and they believe that they have a stake in it because they do. So I loved talking to people on Twitter or on the radio or out in public about this team, and I continue to have these conversations. I don't call them debates, baseball conversations about what's the best way to guide this team moving forward, and that's what I loved about it. That's fine. And you know what? The Cardinals, everybody has a line to the criticism if they want. I'm watching Paul Goldschmidt play catch with Matt Carpenter. There's one guy who doesn't pay attention. Goldschmidt doesn't have a social media account anywhere. But, you know, a lot of these guys do. They hear it, and they use it as fuel.
Yeah, right.
And I think that they like that. This team likes being the underdog, and they probably are again.
Well, Tom, just when you thought I couldn't work fewer hours, lo and behold, I'm told that you're going to take my show over with Ozzy Smith. I'm happy to do it. I'm happy to seed the show during the run here in the 2 o'clock hour. And truth be told, I had already planned to take a few days off next week, so I wouldn't have been here Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But you want to explain to folks what we're going to do with Ozzy?
Yeah, so we there was a thought to take over your show. They had asked if I would take over the 2 o'clock hour, but I can't do that with just anybody. So I've asked one Osborne Earl Smith to help me with this. The Hall of Famer Ozzy Smith is going to join me starting tomorrow in the 2 o'clock hour to break down the NLCS. We'll also talk about his career and some of the great work that he's doing in St. Louis to make this town better via Gateway PGA and PGA Reach. So we'll get into all the things that make Ozzy a great St. Louisan, but is there anyone better qualified to talk about postseason success than Ozzy Smith, who's won 3 pennants and a world championship here? So we will do that, and we'll have a lot of fun with it. Ozzy is excited about it. He's going to be on KMOX Radio, and we couldn't think of a better analyst. So I'll be joined by Ozzy Smith starting tomorrow at 2 o'clock, and we will do that every day next week, every weekday Monday through Friday as this NLCS carries on.
Also on the panel tomorrow on the 2 o'clock hour with Tom and Ozzy, Jane Duker will be here. And no, I'm just kidding, obviously. A little Reardon Roundtable humor there for you, Tom. You tell Mr. Ozzy Smith, my golf partner from Belle Reve earlier this year, and you were supposed to play on that day and you had work to do, that the only thing better than October golf, and I think he will agree with me, is October baseball.
That's absolutely true. It is a great time of year. This city just takes off when the Cardinals are good. And I know that there, I last checked now, I want to mention this, there are still, I think, a few NLCS tickets left. Talked to the Cardinals last night. As soon as the Cardinals won the game, probably as soon as they put 10 runs on the board, but as soon as they won the game, those tickets were flying. And they were going very fast. So you might want to check to see if there's anything left. They start at $40 at Cardinals.com. But this city, this ballpark, is going to be electric. There's something very special when the Cardinals, a regional team, a national team in a lot of ways, fans from all over the country, get excited when the St. Louis Cardinals are back in the NLCS. And they are for the first time in 5 years. It's awesome. I'm sitting here looking at the 11 world championship flags. Mark, if they scoot them all over to the left a little bit, there's room for another one.
I think
it's
going to
take a lot of work.
You know, it's fun. When you mention all the folks around the country, I know you have Cardinals fans that you communicate with. It's been a blast, and I'm sure a lot of other folks are in the same situation, communicating across the fruited plains, if you will, with fans. Everyone from my buddy George Gray, who's from St. Louis, works with Drew Carey on The Price is Right. He's a huge Cardinals fan. He's kind of a negative Cardinals fan. I've tried to turn him around on that, to Scott Jennings, who is one of our, you know, normal contributors here on KMOX, and they're all Cardinals fans, and everyone's excited. So I look forward to you taking over here. This will allow me more time. You tell Ozzy this, I'll be on the golf course while you guys are, you know, taking over that first hour. I'll get here with a tee in my hat in my ear around 3 o'clock tomorrow, Tom.
All right, I'll pass it along to him. Yeah, that guy can play too, isn't he?
He's a good golfer. He is. He swings that sometimes like a baseball. Tom Ackerman with us this afternoon. The Cardinals are in the National League Championship Series.
Miss any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
I can't get enough. I'm looking at some of the tweets about the Cardinals, and there was somebody fully Krasened. I have no idea who that person is, although they have a Cubs hat on in their profile picture. Has this GIF of that's like one of those little internet things that's sort of a moving picture for people who don't know, of a pitcher on the mound and then just about 100 base runners just circling the base pass continuously, which is essentially what that first inning was like yesterday. So how weird is this now? There's weird stuff that happens in the swamp and outside the swamp, related to the swamp. Two Florida businessmen tied to Trump's lawyer, Mr. Rudy Giuliani, Lev Parnas, and Igor Fruman, arrested on a four-count indictment that includes charges of conspiracy. And here's what U.S. Attorney Jeff Berman says what they did.
Parnas and Fruman were arrested around 6 p.m. last night at Dulles Airport as they were about to board an international flight with one-way tickets. As alleged in the indictment, the defendants broke the law to gain political influence while avoiding disclosure of who was actually making the donations and where the money was coming from. They sought political influence not only to advance their own financial interests, but to advance the political interests of at least one foreign official, a Ukrainian government official who sought the dismissal of the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine.
CNN political contributor and our own political contributor, Doug High, former spokesman for the RNC, is here to break all of that down. And I know he's going to offer us congratulations on the NLCS as well. How are you, Doug?
I am going to offer you congratulations. And you know, unfortunately, it's very likely that you'll be losing to the Washington Nationals, which ultimately won't matter because since the New York Yankees are destined to win the World Series this year, it's all for naught for everyone else.
Now, wait, I don't even know where to start here. Now, are you I can't remember. Are you a Yankees guy?
I'm a Yankees fan,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, look, you might be right because they're very, very good, and I'm not so sure Houston survives tonight, but I'd like to play the games out. We'll see how things – look, I think we can win this. I think it's very evenly matched. It wouldn't shock me if the Nats win, but we can win this thing because of the pitching.
No, absolutely. And, you know, the Nationals fans here just have this. This is a bold new territory for them. They've been conditioned to blowing games and series. And so when they were down 3-0 last night, I was on Twitter, and every Nats fan that I knew who lived in D.C. basically said, well, it's game over.
Yeah,
this
I saw your tweet. They were basically giving up, yeah. Right?
Yeah. So it's, you know, baseball's a weird thing. If you have the lead, you can't sit on the ball. You've got to pitch it. And so, you know, you never know what's going to happen.
I mean, Clayton, who would have predicted that? I wonder if you could have made a bet in Vegas that Clayton Kershaw is going to throw 2 back-to-back home runs.
Yeah.
You'd have gotten some long odds on that, although the Cardinals have dinged him up in the postseason. Let's talk about this stuff with Giuliani, Doug. What in the world is this? And doesn't this sort of play into the same narrative from the transcript that the whistleblower turned in, and how does the president sort of react to all this? And by the way, this is William Barr's Justice Department that had prosecuted this and knew what was going on for several months.
Yeah, I mean, it really smells bad. And, you know, one of the things that I've really caught just, you know, since this morning, because this was one of those things that you wake up to and say, wait, what happened?
Yeah, right.
You know, one-way tickets, they were at Dulles, you know, all this kind of stuff. It just leads to more and more questions, and questions that, whether this is the president or not, ultimately we're going to have to find this out. But ultimately, it appears we'll not have good answers for whomever is involved. And there's a lot of speculation that there are more and more shoes to drop on Rudy. And then that certainly could potentially mean the president.
So they allege in the indictment that one of these guys urged the United States congressman to seek the ouster of the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine on the behest of the Ukrainian government officials. Now, that congressman was not identified, but people have put some pieces of the puzzle together. And Congressman 1, as identified in the indictment, matched campaign finance records for Pete Sessions, who was a Texas Republican, lost, you know, Congressman Sessions. So what do you make of that?
Well, and Sessions is looking to run again in a different district. So he lost his reelection, and now he's looking to run in a different district in Texas. You know, this is a very real problem for Pete. I've spent a lot of time with him. I like Pete Sessions a lot. But this is a problem. It's a problem legally. Mm-hmm. It's a problem politically. And not just for Pete and his, you know, reelection hopes, but for the administration as a whole.
Okay, you know, and on
is,
that.
And part of it is, this isn't, you know, you mentioned this is William Barr's Justice Department. What that also means is this isn't Adam Schiff's fault. This isn't Nancy Pelosi. You know, these usual directions where Trump is able to go. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of how Schiff and the Democrats have gone through this process either. You can't pin this on them. And that ultimately is what's really problematic here.
Well, that's what, look, we've been saying, and it's true, that the impeachment process is political. This is criminal. Now, this is not civil. Mm-hmm. This is criminal. So you do have some dots to connect here. I just wonder how close the dots get. You can see very easily, even though the president has stuck by Rudy Giuliani, having him thrown under the bus quickly if he needs to.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that we've learned about Trump is loyalty only goes so far. And while Rudy is out there all day, every day it seems, not today though, coincidentally, on TV with these interviews that make me ask what planet he's on the half the time, you know, it seems that often, you know, whether it's Rudy or other Republicans, they're really hustling to pick up points with Donald Trump, but Donald Trump doesn't give points. He only takes them away, and he takes them away one at a time. And that's something I think, if you're out there and you're really defending the president when you're not sure what the facts are, and ultimately that's the key, it's very easy for you to get undercut, whether you meant to or not.
Yeah, and you might get tripped up there too. So what do you make? I had Illinois Congressman John Shimkus, who announced his retirement from Congress, not going to run for re-election, on my show about a month ago. So easily you can say, look, he's going to say something like this because he's not running for re-election, but he was very harsh on the president yesterday, withdrawing his support because of the situation with Syria. And a lot of Republicans, including Lindsey Graham, have broken bad with the administration on this. Doesn't seem to bother the president, though, in the least.
No, and you know, this was obviously a surprise to a lot of folks. And this is, I think, the dichotomy for a lot of people, a lot of Republicans, especially on Capitol Hill, when it comes to Trump. They're very hesitant to be critical of the personal, which is what a lot of this, you know, Ukraine investigation, impeachment inquiry and all this is about. But when it's policy, they're a lot more strident on this, whether it's what we've seen with Syria, which I couldn't be more upset about that decision, or whether it's what we see with China and so forth. Time and time again, Republicans feel comfortable criticizing Trump on policy where they disagree. It's when it gets more personal, where they know that they could be the next Mark Sanford and lose in a primary, or now even lose in a general, as more Republicans are concerned about for next November.
Well, I'm going to go out with this here. I just found this on YouTube, and I thought it would be appropriate here. I hope there's no bad words in here. Here we go. See if this is for you, Doug.
They're coming for the Yankees, New York, you suck.
All right, best of luck in your series here, whoever you get between the Rays and the Astros, Doug. And I appreciate your help, as always, this afternoon.
It's going to be a great series.
Man, this
good
all
luck
this,
to you.
All this postseason has been fantastic. That's Doug High with us this afternoon.
New York, you suck.
I like that song. Let's save that one, Dave. Might get some use out of it in a couple of weeks.
We've got football. Tonight, it's the Giants and Patriots, and you can hear it here. Kickoff at 7 p.m. on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
So, a little programming reminder. Tom Ackerman revealed this at the top of the hour. We're going to do something here for the next week during the first hour of my show with Tom and Ozzie Smith, mainly because my boss, Steve Moore, was very concerned that I was working and putting in too many hours. I think it was some sort of violation of the union. Is that what it was, Dave? I thought that's what he said. It's like a violation of the union rules. Reardon is working too much, especially with... Well, they wanted to make it easier on me. So, yeah, Tom and Ozzie, the 2 o'clock hour tomorrow, and I think all of next week, and I was actually planning on some vacation days anyway. So it doesn't matter, but that's the bottom line. So no roundtable tomorrow. Are we on the verge of a recession? You're going to find out. Here we have senior U.S. economist at Bank of America, Merrill Lynch Global Research, Joe Song, in St. Louis today. He stopped by for a visit. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Good. Thanks, Mark.
You are here from, we were talking a little bit before on the air. You don't live in Manhattan, but you said Queens, right?
Yep. I'm just outside of Manhattan.
Now, you brought up, before we hit the air here, you brought up Game 5 yesterday and the excitement of that. We're still kind of on the high of the Cardinals. Are you a baseball fan?
I am. You know, probably St. Louis people probably won't like
you
to hear this.
You can confess. Don't worry. It's all good right
okay.
now.
I'm a Yankees fan.
That's
so,
okay. Yeah. You know, I think we happen to love baseball history here.
Yep.
And I think a Yankees-Cardinals World Series would be phenomenal.
That would be special.
And look, yeah. the Yankees are pretty darn good right now. I do think it's great, though, that three out of these four series went to five games. Well, of course, we got a game tonight. So pretty cool. All right, let's talk about the economy here, because obviously... There was this moment a month and a half ago or whenever that happened where we were warned that maybe there was a recession that was possible. A lot of the media jumped on that. I think spooked some people. We saw what happened on Wall Street. So where are we right now? I mean, the economy is sitting pretty strong here in October of 2019.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before I kind of talk about where we are today, let's step back and think about where we came from. Right?
All right.
So in 2018, things looked really good. Right? We're coming off the tax cuts. We're coming off the bipartisan budget deal that injected a lot of fiscal spending into the economy. So we had a lot of momentum heading out of 2018, but some of that started to fade away in the first half, right? So it started to decelerate, and I think that got markets a bit spooked that this deceleration is going to actually accelerate into a recession, right? So some of the data that was coming in came in a little softer than expected, and that got people worried. But so far, things have somewhat stabilized at lower levels. But you know, We're not out of the woods just yet. You know?
What would be when you're talking about not being out of the woods? What are the most concerning things in the economy for you moving forward? I think most of us think, and I'm not an economist, but I've said over the years, a lot of these things are cyclical. It would be, you know, kind of stupid to think that we were not going to head back into hopefully just a mild recession. But what are the things that you would be looking for that might not be so rosy that could lead to some things down the road?
Yeah, I think there's two things. One. The job market is, you know, there's starting to be some cracks in the job market right now. So the pace of job growth has slowed in the past few months. Businesses are pulling back on hours worked for their workers. Also, wage gains have been sort of decelerating to a certain extent. So if workers have less income in their pockets because they're working less or their pay isn't going up as much, that means that there's going to be less spending in the economy. So that just means that we're coming off of just a lower or weaker momentum.
Is there a reason that the companies are pulling back a little bit there just because of these other warning signs?
Yeah, so part of it is the trade war that's going on, right? So that's been lingering for about a year and a half. Now, I don't think we've really felt the direct impact from it, but I think given the uncertainty that it's created and it's generated, I think a lot of businesses are getting defensive and maybe not hiring as many workers or not putting in, you know, a CapEx plan that they were thinking about, or, you know, buying more equipment. So that's kind of led to a bit of a deceleration in business investment. And that has, you know, people somewhat worried and, you know, more conservative with how they go ahead with their spending. And if that kind of leads to weaker activity in the economy, that could potentially lead to a recession.
So I saw some numbers from the Census Bureau on the economy. Mm-hmm. It's the 2018 income and poverty in the U.S. report, obviously going back to last year. The real median earnings up 3.4%, full-time year-round workers up 2.3 million, the poverty rate down from 12.3 to 11.8. Income in the bottom 80% of the households was up significantly. All these things I bring up from this perspective, because not that we want to look at warning signs and see what's going to happen down the line, but I think, not to inject politics into this, the president would say, hey, you people out there in the media are talking about these things that might be bad, but we got this economy that is the best economy, as he says, in the last 50 years, right? Yep. Or in history. He might say history too, Joe. I don't know.
Well, no doubt, this expansion has been, it's the longest in history, especially in, well, at least going back to World War II, right? So it's one of the, it's the longest expansion on record. We've been doing really well. We haven't hit any significant bumps in the road for the U.S. economy, but there are some signs that we are slowing. And, you know, it doesn't mean that this expansion doesn't have to last, right? So it means that we're probably going to have monetary policy a bit easier, right? So the Fed probably has to lower interest rates a bit more to generate a bit more confidence in financial markets and also help the housing sector and interest-sensitive parts of the economy. But there is a risk of a policy misstep, either on the trade war or on the monetary policy front. So that means that the balance of risks are probably tilted to the downside. That doesn't mean that the baseline isn't necessarily a good
but
one.
But the reality of the way the economy works, too, just to you're going to be the one who's going to confirm or deny this. But if, let's say, we fast forward a year and we're just ahead of the election, we might be in a recession. I'm not trying to predict that, but we might not know until February or January, right? Because these things kind of look backward at GDP numbers.
Mm-hmm. That's true. You know, the folks who actually decide when we're in a recession or not, it usually takes them, you know, 3 to 4 quarters to look back and actually declare that we're in a recession.
And by the way, I'm not saying, I think most economists that I've heard from would say that if this does occur, probably wouldn't be next year. Do you agree with that sentiment?
We agree with that. So, you know, we think that the subjective probability of a recession in the next 12 months is maybe 1 in 3. So it's elevated, but it's not, we're not calling for a recession anytime soon. But you can see the data in real time or close to real time, especially for the job market and consumer spending. And those levels have come off really strong numbers, and you are starting to see them soften a bit. And that's what has us a bit worried, given the challenges that are ahead of us.
How do you think the trade war wraps up? I mean, I hear different perspectives on this. Some people, and I have a variety of people come on here and are a lot smarter than me to speak to these issues, they have said this is part of the strategy, this is negotiating tactics, although I've heard more concern than earlier this year on how this potentially might wrap up. So there are people who are jittery.
I think I'm in that camp. What we've seen from this trade war is that every tariff that President Trump has threatened has ultimately been put into place. So we still have 2 rounds of tariffs remaining, one that's supposed to go into effect on October 15th, one that's supposed to go into effect on December 15th. You know, the optimist in me says maybe, so the Chinese delegate is in Washington, D.C. right now. So the optimist in me thinks maybe they strike some sort of short-term deal that delays these tariffs. But ultimately, we feel that they will go into effect, and these next rounds are going to meaningfully hit the consumer. The tariffs are going to be on consumer products like laptops, electronics, clothing, toys. That means that higher prices for consumers, right? And if the job market is slowing, wage growth is decelerating, that means that they're going to have less purchasing power when they go to Walmart, when they go to the retailer. That means that real growth is going to start to slow down.
But is the president wrong when he says that there are, and he campaigned on this, that there are inequities and he's trying to fix these things?
You know, I think there are some, legitimate concerns about China, you know, with IP theft and just playing on the same fair playing field. The question is, how do you actually get them to agree to those terms. It's unclear to me whether or not imposing these tariffs are going to lead to China to agree to play on fair terms. We're going to have to wait and see. Right now, there's going to be near-term pain before we actually see the long-term gains.
Senior U.S. economist for Bank of America, Joe Song, unfortunately, Yankees fan. That's okay, though. If we face the Yankees in the World Series, we expect that you will come back on here, Joe. Great to see you. Enjoy your stay in St. Louis.
Thank you.
St. Louis's traffic station, KMOX.
Ozzy and Tom will be here tomorrow when we usually have the roundtable. Then I'll take over at 3 o'clock and we'll have a little fun in that 3 o'clock hour leading into Total Information PM. A lot of Cardinals stuff tomorrow before game one of the National League Championship Series. It really, honestly, and I think maybe for a lot of Cardinals fans, it did not kick in until Tuesday night for me that the Cardinals might not only be in the NLCS, but they might be playing at home. And that happened last night with the victory over the Dodgers. Man, Clayton Kershaw, do you feel badly for him? Because of his postseason performances, he gives up two back-to-back home runs, and the Dodgers just can't get it done after being one of the most dominant teams in all of the major leagues. I saw this on Twitter a couple of days ago, and I think it raises some pretty good points about what they refer to as phishing attempts. Phishing attempts, P-H-I-S-I-N-G. So, for example, and this is, I think, maybe more true with elderly people who are potential victims, but I think anyone can be a victim of someone calling. I get these IRS calls sometimes with people who have foreign accents, and I like to call them back and, you know, mess with them. Oh, I got to tell, should I tell people about the moveon.org thing, Dave? So I get this text. Wait, okay. I digress here for a moment. I get this text today, and it's from moveon.org, and it says, "Hi, Mark. I'm Randy at moveon.org. Or a move-on volunteer. President Trump's corruption and abuse of power are impeachable offenses, and we need to do everything we can to impeach Trump now and ensure that complicit Republicans are defeated in 2020. Will you pledge to vote Democrat in 2020? Reply yes, and we will share periodic texts from MoveOn's 668-366 number about how you can make a difference." Message and data rate supply. That's what it says. My response, should I tell him what my real response was? He's nervous that I'm going to, well, I don't care. I've been very clear about my love of profanity, right? So my response was, how does blank off work for you? Randy responded, I'm removing you from further texts from Move On immediately. Have a great day. Okay, back to the phishing. There's this guy, I don't know this guy, Peter Gunst. He's known as @DigitalLawyer. This is a great lesson for everyone, not only your elderly parents or people who are old. So this guy says that he was subjected to the most credible phishing attempt that he's experienced. And here's what happened. He did this string on Twitter. Hi, this is your bank. There was an attempt to use your card in Miami, Florida. Was this you? He says, no. Okay, we blocked the transaction. To verify that I'm speaking to Peter, what is your member number? Me gives member number. That number by itself is useless, he says. 3, we've sent a verification PIN to your phone. You know how you get those? I mean, when I sign on to U.S. Bank these days, it's like every time. And I get annoyed by that, but then again, I'd rather not have my money stolen, right? So you kind of go with that. Let's see. We've sent a verification PIN to your phone, gets verification PIN text from bank's regular number. So it's like the one that he usually gets, and then he reads out the PIN for that, the verification PIN. Number 4, okay, I'm going to read some other transactions. Tell me if these are yours. The person on the other end of the phone read the transactions. Me, yes, these are all legitimate transactions. Number 5, thank you. We now want to block the PIN on your account so you get a fraud alert when it's used again. What is your PIN? He says, are you effing kidding me? No way. They say, okay, but then we can't block your card. Me, that is BS, Peter says. Hangs up, calls the fraud department of the bank. Once I gave my member number, the attacker used the password reset flow to trigger a text message from the bank. They used this to gain access to the account. Then they read some of my transactions to give the call more credibility. They needed the PIN to send money. They failed at that step. Everything before the, this is what's, I think, fascinating by this, and this is what the lesson is. Because these things have gotten so sophisticated, he basically admits everything before the what's your PIN seemed totally legitimate. English was perfect. I mentioned on the IRS calls, usually it's not someone who speaks very good English. And by the way, just so you know, the IRS never calls you. They will not call you. They will send you a letter in the mail, certified. Gotten those before too, but they will not call you. So they had the bank verification code. They sent by the expected number. They tricked him. They asked for the PIN over the phone. So that's kind of where things went awry. And he said, stay safe out there, people. And now, joyfully resetting all my passwords, filing a police report, getting additional fraud detection in place. Never a dull moment. Some lessons there from this guy. Again, Peter Gunst on Twitter. Just a very, very sophisticated phishing attempt. Be careful out there, people. Roddy Davis, Illinois Congressman, Braves fan of all things, coming up.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.